Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Five o'clock, city workers flock into the bosom of fast pints and loosened ties. Clock ticking down to the train next door, emptying the moon underwater.
I'm Robbie Knox, and I'm the landlord of the Moon Underwater, a mystical place where guests create their dream pub.
Dan!
Hello,
Dan.
Mate.
Wow, you confidently strode through that door there.
I felt like, you know, like in an old West movie, you know, when they come in through the double doors. I just thought I'd come in a bit like that, but
yeah.
Through a single door.
It's a single door, yeah. And it's an automatic door as well.
Yeah, I didn't have to push it. In fact, pushing it, it took longer to open.
Yeah, you just sort of damaged the mechanism a bit, yeah. So we're going to be charging you for that. How's your week been?
Pretty good, thanks.
Glad to be back in the moon.
Good.
In the moon, as we're calling it now.
It is nice to be back.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like I haven't been here since last night.
You were, yeah. You were here last night, weren't you?
Yeah, I was, yeah.
Obviously, it was the launch of your Book of Children's Lullabies, wasn't it?
It was.
Would you mind, because I really enjoyed some of them, would you mind just reciting one of those original lullabies that you did?
Yes.
Okay, go for it.
I mean, I've got to admit, I'd had a couple of pints. What did I do?
You read loads from the book, really.
Really?
So any of the ones, you really.
Okay. Well, this one's called... this is a little lullaby that I wrote for my son, Leo.
Oh, that's nice.
I don't know if you remember the 80s, Robbie. Were you around in the 80s?
Yep. Yeah.
And did you enjoy club chocolate bars? Did you
have
clubs
really.
In those days?
I remember them. Oh, they were all right, actually.
Yeah.
I like the orange one.
Okay. But do you remember there also used to be other things a bit like that? Little small, like penguins and things like that. Little small treats. Do you remember the Trio?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
Which was a chocolatey biscuit with a toffee taste too.
Yeah.
Remember the advert?
It's quite a lot of lore and build-up for this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So... So I took that as an inspiration because I liked that at the time. It was a good advert. And I reworded it for my son, Leo. So it goes like this. It goes, Leo, Leo, I want a Leo and I want one now. Not one, not two, but three little Leos. A chocolatey Leo with a Leo bit too.
You've only got one son called Leo,
yeah,
though.
I got the words wrong. It's supposed to go, not three, not two, but one little Leo.
Okay.
A chocolatey
Leo. That's good, because it did feel a bit like he wasn't enough for you. Well, fabulous. It's lost none of its magic in the 12 hours since I last said you recite it.
I assume it's all right to, there's no copyright issues with 1980s adverts. And reworking them
above the moon underwater's pay grade, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay.
Ooh. Sorry to interrupt you there, Dan, because I'm just looking out over the horizon. And who is that? tangoing his way towards the underwater. Is it the Guinness reviewer and social media megastar Prime Mutton? I think it is. Mutton,
unbelievable.
Hello, great to be here. I'm on good form.
Excellent. Well, we're honoured to have you here. Just first of all, is it Prime? Is it Mutton? Is it Prime Mutton? What are we going with?
I think Mutton.
I like it.
Some people call me Prime, but I prefer Mutton.
I think it's I think it's a fine choice. For people who don't know your from social media,
Oeuvre.
There's a lot of you seem to travel the world drinking Guinness and other beers, but a lot of Guinness and watching Manchester City. Is that a fair estimation?
It looks like an incredible life, basically.
Yeah. Yes, that's the long of the short of what I actually do and like doing, although I do something else. I play bridge professionally as well. The money in terms of vlogging, drinking pints of beer doesn't quite pay enough for all the travel.
So it's the bridge that helps you get around the place and you supplement that with drinking and football watching.
Exactly. In an ideal world, I'd be just a vlogger who played bridge when I wanted to, and I'd have millions of views, but probably there aren't that many Guinness drinkers in the world.
There probably are.
Maybe.
You just need to gather them all in.
Yeah. Have you ever played bridge, Dan? I've never played bridge.
I used to play at the sixth form at school because my friend Alex was a fan and he got me along. And I was in bridge club a bit, but I never quite got hold of the bidding process at the beginning when you've got your cards. I found that quite tricky.
Yeah, I think of it as, when I think of bridge, I think of the Golden Girls, that sort of American sort of, I guess, southern United States sort of.
Yeah.
It feels like a lot of it. Is it what countries is it big in, bridge?
The United States and China in particular, but Scandinavia, Poland, and to an extent Britain, France and Germany. But the big difference is that most of the players here and in the States are like a retired colonel and his wife. And in Scandinavia and China, it's like a 35-year-old engineer.
Right. Ooh. Interesting, isn't it? No, I'm a professional.
That's what I felt was it the retired colonel and his wife is the image in my mind of them having a couple round and having dinner and then playing bridge afterwards. Yeah.
I bet you meet some incredible people.
Yes, that's very much so, including Omar Sharif.
Are you met Omar Sharif? Yeah, that's the only bridge player I can think of.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Yeah, sadly not a beer drinker. He was into his whiskey.
Was he?
Yeah.
Was he good fun on a night out, Omar?
Yeah, he was. And he sought the company of people who liked drinks and were interested in drinks. We talked about whiskey all night, and he wasn't necessarily looking to socialise with the top players.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
That's incredible, incredible stuff. So, bridge, travelling around, drinking, playing bridge. But where did it all start? When did you first? What were your first memories of pubs?
My first memories of pubs were from my 20s. I wasn't a big drinker in my teens. I've obviously aware of people who started drinking way before they were of a legal age to drink. And at the time, I just had what I saw available. In the late 80s, early 90s, the range of ales and bitters, or whatever you want to call them, is very, very limited. And I think the Tide House system was very damaging before Camera managed to get guest beers into pubs. And I was a bit put off by the poor flavours of drinks. And then I went to Ireland for the first time and tried the Guinness, having not actually liked it in Britain. And it was like a Demessine conversion. I thought, wow, what is this? This is like mother's milk. This is, what have I missed here? And ever since then, I've been particularly big on stout. But with the renaissance of cask brewing and to an extent keg brewing, I've diversified a bit and I do like my pale ales.
And where were those early pubs that you started going to? Which ones would they have been when you first got into them?
Well, in terms of the pubs I went to in Britain, I don't know the viewers or the listeners would know much about Didsbury in South Manchester, but there were a few real ale pubs which was fortunate because when I started playing bridge professionally. I'd go to Birmingham and Leeds and places like that, and it was always sort of Bass or Tetley's or the big name beers, and I didn't think they had that much flavour. But fortunately near me, there was a pub called the Dog and Partridge, which isn't quite as good as it used to be. The Crown in Stockport under a railway viaduct, fantastic place, 16 cask ales and a couple of ciders. And I must admit, I always tried to work my way through the beer board and failed halfway through. But I got to try a lot of different flavours there, and it's helped shape my taste in my later years.
Fabulous. Well, we're going to get into designing your dream pub mutton. But first of all, Dan, do you want to explain your bell?
Yes, mutton. This is my bell, which I liberated from a tugboat on the estuary here in the correct realm. And if this bell rings, means one of your choices has is going to appear in front of you.
Magically. And you can the moon underwater will create it shimmering in front of you.
And you can do what you like, mutton. You can take it away with you. You can drink it straight away. Whatever you like, it's up to you.
You can smell it and pour it down the sink if you want. You can choose. It's entirely up to you.
Yeah, there's no judgment.
I'll probably drink it. I haven't come here to pass.
I suspect you might.
Okay.
Wonderful. Thank you, Dan, for explaining the bell so eloquently.
Thanks, mate.
First of all, then, you get two choices on draft. What is your first choice?
Okay.
I'm curious. Is Guinness going to be one of them?
Yeah.
No, actually not. Because Guinness is such a wildly inconsistent drink. My favourite drink ever is the Guinness you can get in the top pubs in Dublin, where it's looked after superbly. Yeah. But because it's more consistent in Britain and it's brewed to a very good recipe, London Black Porter would absolutely be my first choice.
Oh!
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Straight away, the moon underwater, you see it just appearing in front of us. Beautiful scenes.
You tell us about London Black while it appears.
I was very lucky, actually, just to come across it in the first place. My local in South Manchester played a really nice craft beer bar called Reasons to be Cheerful. It's on Fog Lane near Burnage Station, which Mancunians would know. And the bar manager, who's a very, very, very good bar manager, said, oh, we've got a little stout that you probably like. So I came in, I tried, I thought, wow, this is superb. This is as good as any Guinness, apart from those select few places in Ireland. In fact, better than some of the, what you might call ordinary pints of Guinness I've had. And it has a lot of flavours I like that are in Guinness, but the flavours are very subtle, and it's slightly stronger on the chocolate flavour. Again, it's a very, very light chocolate flavour, which is the case with Guinness, because most stouts have chocolate and coffee notes. But the skill is not making them too accentuated. And what usually happens with English-style porters and stouts is that the coffee notes are a little bit too strong. But the balance is very good here.
And this can, we're quite lucky to get these, actually, because they've only just launched these, Robbie. In can form, they've only just launched them. And I had to, like the pub, you know, the realm.
The realm.
Had to ring around the other realm to find them. So, I should shout out to Beertopia. In Borough Market. Oh, it's one of the few places that is currently stocking it. And they very nicely, and this I think is typical of Ansbach and Hobday, I think they're at the moment they're giving it to the smaller stockists that have supported them through their journey so far, rather than just sort of going, right, you know, all the supermarkets can have it. So they're sort of staying loyal to the people that have supported them, which is nice.
I think you know that the rates for inter-realm phone calls can be extortionate. So I hope you don't get a nasty surprise when your phone bill comes up. Open my London.
Whoa. It's all right, because I did it on the... I did it in the pub the other day when you were in the cellar,
I'm very keen to try this because I'm in contact with the tap room a lot because I visit and taste their stuff. And the manager Courtney said, I'm going to send you some stuff up. I've been away and I've not yet been able to try the cans.
So this is the first time
Amazing. I understand that they're sold out.
Yes.
The reviews I've seen have been very favourable. before. So I'm hoping this slips down as nicely as the... Well, it can't be as good as the draft, but
yes,
slips down pretty nicely.
Now, I had mentioned London Black to you on the show, not Robbie, because they've got a lovely thing on their website, which is like, you know, when you go, if you say, oh, I need my local boots or something, and you go on the website, you see where's the closest one to me, and you have a store locator. They've got the same thing, but for where you can get London Black in a pub on draft. So you type in your postcode, and it says, here are the local pubs. So I hadn't tried it before, and I found there was a pub near me called Elm Park Tavern. So one day I had a little half-hour stroll over to that and had a pint of it, and it was very nice. And I checked for here. And other than the Moon Underwater, the Holy Tavern, fairly nearby, has got London Black on draft. So
I'm just checking now to see my Norwich options.
And there's a few in there.
There are a couple in there. Let's have a look. Norwich, we can get it at... That looks like Rumsey, Strangers Tavern. It's got a lovely craft beery sort of place. And Sir Toby's, which is a great, in the market, a great little craft beery sort of thing. Okay, that's interesting.
Lovely.
Norwich side of things. How should I be pouring? Should I be drinking this straight away? Do I need to let it settle when it's in a can? How does it work?
As soon as the liquid and the foam has surged to the top, I would get on with it straight away, because you don't want the head to become too thin. And like Guinness and other stouts, if you leave it out for too long, it can start going off and turning a bit sour.
Have I poured that too delicately? Because I've got much.
I think so. Yeah. I think I've got about the right amount of head. And what I was doing was just mimicking the way it's poured on draft sometimes. It's where the glass is tilted.
Yes.
And then at the end straightened. So you get quite a creamy head on top, but not too large a head.
Yeah. So I went too much for the tilt, I think, and not enough. Dan, you've done well.
Done all right. Considering I haven't got really a proper pint glass. But
no. Like a London Black snifter.
I mean, it's really nice. So you speak to Anspach and Hobday a fair bit, do you?
Yeah. Mm. And actually later today I'll be visiting their tap room. And I'm obviously keen to see it stocked in more pubs because sometimes the Guinness is not looked after properly. It can be a bit of a horror show. It might be that the sort of pub that stocks London Black, the pubs which are discerning about the beers they stock and they look after their beer, it might be if it turned up in nearly every pub like Guinness, that it might not taste so good in some pubs. But I've honestly yet to have a bad pint of it.
Yeah, I think so.
It's just on coffee taste, doesn't it?
It does have a coffee taste, yes.
Yeah, I really like that. That was my first ever London Black. Dan, what do we know?
Well, it's... it's been going for a while, and it sort of quickly became their sort of major selling brand of the different drinks they do. So I think 77% of their kegged production is now London Black. So it's become really popular. I haven't checked this, but I think this is correct. It's the only alternative to Guinness, which scores higher on Untappd. So it's the only one which so it's obviously outscoring others like Brewdogs, Blackheart, and things like that.
Can vouch for that being an accurate assessment.
Yeah, which is incredible, really, because I mean we talk a lot about Guinness on this on this program, and a lot of people choose Guinness. So to get above that is some achievement. Yeah,
it's by far the most chosen drink, Guinness, on this podcast, and I've got more into it. Like since starting doing this and hear everyone talking about it so passionately. And I've also got into it by drinking a lot of the Guinness Zero as well, when occasionally I want to have a night without the thing. Have you tried that?
I have. It's quite a good drink. Mm. And I've had it once on draft at All Places, the Guinness Storehouse in Dublin. My girlfriend isn't into beer, and you get a ticket with a voucher for a free beer when you go in. And you can basically have the alcoholic version or the zero.
Yeah,
it's the third time I've been there. I first went in, I think it was 1993, at their old place. Went to this place, I think, in 2000. Came back again last winter. I think it was last November. And I was astonished all three times their regular pint of Guinness did not taste at all good. Nothing.
Really?
Oh. I'd say it was would be okay in a British pub, but I've been to better places in Britain, which is bizarre given it's supposed to be the home of Guinness. But I tried the Zero, and absurdly, it was a better drink there than the alcoholic version. Obviously, if you go 10 minutes down the road to a pub and order the normal Guinness, it's much, much better. But I was surprised by how good a drink the Zero is.
Fabulous.
Yeah, big fan as well.
What's accompanying you in along with London Black is your second choice on draft?
It is Jaipur IPA from the Thornbridge Brewery in Bakewell, Derbyshire.
Fabulous choice. Fabulous beer. Tell us about why you picked that.
Back in the day, most of the ales that you could get in pubs in Britain, say in the early 2000s, tended to be a sort of standard English IPA. Very pleasant often, but obviously beers that use American hops can produce a lot of different flavours. And I remember trying this thinking, wow, grapefruit, a bit of tropical fruit, a dry finish as well, because I don't like particularly sweet beers. Where's this come from? And a friend of mine who owns a pub in Birmingham said, when we have that on, it goes so quickly, the punters are absolutely wild about it. That and one I nearly chose called Batham's Black Country Bitter. If you're not in there quickly, the cask or the keg is gone. It's better on cask than keg. And the Thornbridge Brewery was one of the first British breweries to produce what they call a Pacific or West Coast style IPA. Absolutely one of my favourites. And whilst occasionally I can go to a pub that uses a small local brewery and say, oh yeah, this is a great Pacific IPA, of the Pacific IPAs I see regularly in pubs, Jaipur's the best one. And the strength is quite good for a Pacific IPA. You can't have a weak one. 5.9%. A lot of them are too strong in the sevens or the eights. And so you're not going to have much of a session on that unless you've got like an iron stomach and an iron brain. And when I walk into a pub, if I see Jaipur on, unless they have London Black, then it's not a choice for me. I always order it.
If I go into a sort of craft beery type pub and they have any West Coast IPA, I would generally go for it. Because it's a style that's become a little bit less fashionable, I think, with the sort of rise of sort of New England, more sort of hazy things and that. But I'd love them. Absolutely love them. Fabulous choice. Dan, what's your facts for us?
Well, it's similar to what Mutton was saying, really, that Thornbridge started in 2004, and Jaipur was their second beer that they started producing, and it just became almost immediately incredibly popular. Like, they, you know, just the demand outstripped supply almost straight away, and that's they had to start upscaling their you know, they moved where their brewery was, basically because of the seems to be because of the success of Jaipur. It was so popular, so it really, you know, they started a brewery, they made Jaipur, and then it took off, like, which is an incredible story. But they also have weird stuff on their website now with the Jaipur label, like there's a Jaipur barbecue sauce, there's a Jaipur hot sauce, and there's a thing called a snack alami, which is a collaboration with the Serious Pig. So it's sort of what, you know, like a beer stick that they get, and they blended herbs, and you know, and it's perfect accompaniment to the Jaipur IPA, if you like that kind of thing. So
Very much so. In fact, my favourite beer snack is biltong. The spicier the better.
I like a sausage roll at a pub. I like when there's a bar where on the bar where they've just got a tray of sausage rolls sort of thing. Like maybe under a little cloche. Are we calling that cloche?
Well, you've judged a sausage roll competition. You're a true expert.
Judged a sausage roll competition.
Yeah.
I feel like that's the kind of thing you'd have done in the past, Mutton. You've judged a sausage roll competition or something like that. You seem like a man who's done unexpected things.
Well, I've not done anything quite like that, but I mean, I know my sausage rolls when I eat them, and shall we say there's better than Greg's knocking around.
There certainly is. Okay, wonderful. Well, a couple of great choices on draft there. I'm really, really enjoying London Black.
It's really nice.
Do the Moon Underwater only conjure three cans, yeah?
Just wondering. It might be an extra one.
Okay, good. Unless you know that.
You know, just on that, I love their bitter. Have you had their bitter as well? Their session bitter.
I did a YouTube vlog where I tried every single thing they had available on tap. They had one cask, which they kindly put on because they knew I was coming.
Nice.
Again, it was a West Coast style IPA. And I tried all their kegs. I liked all of them except for the porter. Okay. And the problem with the porter, it was a keg porter. And I've become accustomed to stout that's delivered through nitrogen rather than CO2. And it can be A, slightly fizzy if it's from CO2, or not have enough richness and creaminess. And okay, maybe X years ago that was all you got, and so people would be happy with that. But once you've had a nitro delivered stout, it's different gravy.
Yeah. What does it mean, nitro delivered?
It means that the gas used to dispense the beer is nitrogen. Most lagers and keg ales, they use CO2 to dispense them, which is why if you have like a popular commercial pale ale, like say Brewdog, they will be very slightly fizzy. In fact, even keg Jaipur, because they have cans, bottles, kegs and casks, will be slightly fizzy. And nitrogen keg beer or cask beer will have that smooth and creamy effect, and I vastly prefer stouts that are delivered by nitrogen. In fact, I tend not to drink the CO2 stouts.
I've said before in here, I'm not brilliant at telling what a good Guinness is. I don't think I've done enough Guinnessing to be able to properly do it. Do you have a particularly good palate, do you think? Do you think you're well? Is it practice for that, or is it just something that you're naturally good at, do you think?
I'm quite good with my taste buds when it comes to food and drink, but I mean, I've had so many pints of Guinness, good and bad. And when you go over to Ireland and have the top stuff, you know exactly how it should taste. And then you come back to Britain, and except for a handful of pubs where they do it properly, you know how it shouldn't taste. Very thin, manky and sour in some places, instead of being rich and creamy. Sometimes, obviously, the barman doesn't know how to pour it properly and you get a ridiculously big head or a thin head, which is no good either. The telltale signs are basically a head that's turning a little yellow rather than white, or if when you taste it, it's got a very, very sour and overly bitter taste. There should be some bitterness in a pint of Guinness, but just like the chocolate and coffee notes, it should be very mildly pronounced, which is why in Ireland, by the way, they call it a pint of plain.
And where would you say you've drunk, because you've drunk Guinness all over the world, where was the most unexpectedly good Guinness outside of Ireland?
It was in New Zealand, actually.
Okay.
I don't know whether I caught a fresh keg at the right temperature, but I went to a few places and not only was the music fantastic, I was thinking, wow, this is much better than I expected, because I'd gone into a place that sadly closed called the Dog's Bollocks now in Auckland, and all the taxi drivers said, no, don't go to O'Neill's or whatever the generic Irish pub is, go to this place. It was a very genuine Irish pub and they had great music every night. And I thought, well, I'll just have one pint, see how it is probably, and then switch to something local. And I was on it all night because it was that good. Not as good as in Ireland, but still pretty good.
And what is it that pubs do, apart from the, as you mentioned, how to pour it and just basic cleanliness, what are the important factors that separates a great Guinness from a good Guinness?
In terms of what the pub's doing, how they wash the glasses is important, because I understand from listening to the guy who runs reputably the best pub in Ireland for Guinness, the Gravediggers in northwest Dublin, that if you have cups of tea and coffee and food, plates with that have just had food on them going into the dishwasher, then the glasses are going to have just a very slight taint. Also, the connection between the cooler and the pipes, you want that to be very close together. The cooling system and the tap, you want short lines. But the most important thing is having the punters in there drinking. If you see one of these pubs where there's a whole line of pints settling, it's nearly always a good pint.
Because there's such a high turnover. Yeah,
it's got to move through the lines constantly. A pint of Guinness that sits in the lines for ages is going to be a bad pint.
Okay.
Great advice.
That's great advice.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Right, you get two bottles or cans in your pub mutton. What's your first choice going to be?
My first choice is actually a lager. Now, I do travel a lot, so in some places, lager is what I have to end up drinking. And when in Germany, I came across something called Tegernsee Hell, which is a Bavarian brew. And I found that it had a lot of great flavour, which was, it was actually very, very slightly malty, which surprised me. That might just be my taste buds. But I thought, hey, I don't drink lager much, but this is lager I can drink. And then I discovered by accident, the local where I have my London Black, Reason to Be Cheerful, they had it on tap as well. So, I mean, I saw a bottle. I said, no, we got it on tap. And it was delicious. I used to get very bad hangovers from British-made lagers like Carling. And it might be the purity laws in Germany, but I can drink that without getting such a bad head.
You mentioned Reasons to Be Cheerful a few times. My wife's from Burnage, so I've seen it before. I've never been in, so now I know.
It's a must-visit if you're...
I will pop up next time.
The manager, James, keeps his beer beautifully and very knowledgeable about which ones to get in.
It's by the station, isn't it?
Yeah. Easy to find.
Excellent. Okay, right. That's another thing to tick off next time I'm up that way. Dan, have you got any facts about this? Presumably a Heller's.
Yeah, I mean, hell. I didn't know this actually, but hell in German it just means pale.
Okay.
So, and it's not actually a lot of information about this that I could find, but it's it is a very well respected beer. Like, it's one of those ones you start looking around and people start going, oh, this is a proper lager. You know, it's not on another level to most of the lagers that you're going to drink. But German Wikipedia said that the company sees itself as a successor to a brewery in a monastery that had been founded in the year 1000. So it's incredibly old. Yeah. And they said, I think they're a little bit skeptical about that, but they said certainly it dates back to 1675 when an abbot called Bernhard Wenzel bought the necessary brewing rights and they started making this lager. So it's got a strong lineage and a long history.
A lot of my brewer friends really drink a lot of each other's lagers because there's nothing to hide in a lager, I think. They'll go that you can chuck a lot of hops at something that might not be spot on otherwise, but in a lager, I think it's a really good lager. I think it is fabulous. Mm. You just get quite a lot of awful ones.
Yeah, I need to try that, yeah.
Okay, well, I look forward to trying that. What's your second drink in bottle or can?
Second drink is Weightless IPA from the Red Willow Brewery in Macclesfield. Again, a brewery that I found out about by accident, and I'm very glad I did. It was quite an amusing accident, actually. I was sitting on a train from London, Euston to Manchester, and I bought a couple of cans from the buffet, and I don't think it was called Tilting Ale at the time. I think it was another of their beers called Reckless. And I had the beer. I thought, this is quite nice. This is, who's the supplier? Red Willow. Looked on the back of the can. Macclesfield. And I had a look and thought, where's this train stopping? One of the stops was Macclesfield. So I got off. And they have a wonderful brewery tap room not far from the station. The only problem was when I was on my second pint there, I got a phone call from my father who was due to pick me up from Stockport and I'd forgotten about it and got off the train at Macclesfield for a couple of pints.
You're so excited by the taste of this beer that yes. I was forced off the train. Amazing.
That is, if you make such an impulsive beer decision, that must be a terrific pint.
Yeah, and I go with a friend of mine who lives in Macclesfield quite a lot to the tap room because they have a huge range. And I'm not that big on the keg beers when they're too strong, but this one they have sometimes on cask and they have it on in cans as well. And it's a great strength beer for a session. Got a very, very simple, clear taste. I think it's single hopped as well, maybe with Simcoe. I'm not Mosaic. Quite sure. A Mosaic, is it? Yeah. And it's got a very clear taste. You can taste citrus, which is something I really like in pale ales. Mm. And it's very sessionable, basically.
Yeah, I like those things with Mosaic. And what have nice. What else do you know, Dan?
Well, what I quite liked about Red Willow was because I go away, do a bit of research, and then there's so many breweries around now, and quite often they, you know, especially the ones that have become quite large, they have quite a big section about their story and their journey and all of that and how it all began and the happy coincidences and all of this. And Red Willow just went, yeah, we're just a brewery and we really love beer. That's basically their story. Yeah. I thought, that's actually, I really like that.
It's quite
really
refreshing,
nice.
Isn't it?
Yeah,
like their beers. Yeah.
So that was good. But they've done this lovely thing. I don't know if they're doing it this year, but they've done a thing called I Am Woman for the last couple of years for International Women's Day, where they kind of got local women who is in different working in different areas and to come in and brew their own beer, and then they then sent that out and they called it I Am Woman, and it's an IPA. They did I Am Woman Volume 2 last year. It's very successful, and they got a big diverse group to come together, and so that's a really nice idea as well, just to get a load of people to go, do you want to come and all make a beer together? And that must be a great time to do that.
There's a lot of craft brewers that do lovely things like that.
Yeah, there's a lot of community stuff involved with craft brewers, I think. So,
yeah, wonderful. Yeah.
And I do think that they are still supplying the West Coast trains with their, I think it's called Tilting Ale now.
Right.
It was a month ago.
Okay, well, next time I'm up that way, I will check it out. Fabulous.
Okay, phones away. Put a gag on Siri. It's quiz time. Elvis's black belt was in karate. I saw it on QI. No half points for saying J.K. Rowling is the lead singer of Jamiroquai.
Moira Stewart.
No, I'm afraid it was Gordon Honeycomb.
Do you enjoy a pub quiz, Mutton?
I do. Unfortunately, there are certain subjects I'm not good at, and most of my friends are not good at those subjects either, which is TV, film and pop music. But my musical tastes are somewhere wedged back in the 70s and 60s. Even though I wasn't alive in the 60s, it's the sort of stuff I like.
Wonderful. Well, Dan here every week gives a pub quiz. I don't know what the topic is. I don't know the questions. So he will give us a pub quiz now. We can compete against each other.
Okay.
And hopefully it's not about pop music. And if it is, hopefully it's about the 60s.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is. It's a pop music question and a film question. So it's not, okay, not great.
I'll do
but,
my best.
I'll do your best. I thought there's only one subject we could do prime for you, and that would be sheep. So we've got three questions. I'll read them out. Have a think.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll come back in a second part of the podcast and reveal the answers. So don't give your answers just yet. You've got time to mull over them a bit. Okay.
What is your why prime mutton, by the way? Why would you call it that?
It's obviously a bit of an oxymoron because mutton can't be prime.
Yeah.
But I like to see myself as somebody who's a prime reviewer and taster of food and drink, but I'm not in the best physical shape either. So that's why the combination of prime and mutton came about.
I love it. Okay, question one, which is the music one, but it is from the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
In 1977, which band released an album called Animals, which had track titles that included the names of animals in this order? Pigs, dogs, pigs, sheep, pigs. It is definitely a band you've heard of. Definitely. Very big band.
Okay. A band from the 70s.
70s. Question two. Who is Clarice Starling hunting in the film and the book The Silence of the Lambs? Who is she hunting? Think about it. Don't jump to conclusions. And question three. Our pod is named after the George Orwell essay, The Moon Underwater. But he also, of course, wrote Animal Farm. What phrase were the sheep often bleating during that novel?
God, this is a hard one.
Yes, very hard.
Yeah.
I don't think I've got any
You will know the answer to that when you hear it, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, well, we will find out the answers to that pub quiz in the second half of The Moon Underwater. We'll see you soon in part two. We will continue creating Mutton's dream pub.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.